Reactor online. Sensors online. Weapons online. All systems nominal.
Hello, everybody. This is Carrie with Unicorn Company. So I apologize for the infrequency of the episodes. It's just been really hectic with getting the raffle wrapped up and everything. But we are finally at the last of our reviews of historical periods for BattleTech. This one is the Dark Ages. This episode, we'll be taking a look at a few things, a quick overview of the era, the factions as they exist in this era, and finally, a look at the factions which are there in the era as it's about to move into the Ilclan era. Afterwards, we'll be looking at the Jenner, and as this is the last episode of Season 2, in the four-week break, there will be many episodes looking at the Jenner 2C, the Owens, and the Owens, which are evolutionary successors to the design. Also, I believe the Rattlesnake, which came out in one of the Shrapnel issues. So let's get into this, starting with the news. The first thing I want to cover in our news segment is that the Master Unit List now has a beta update for the Ilclan era. For the Inner Sphere factions, you have a few listed, of course, the Capcom, Draconis Combine, Fed Sons, Free Worlds League, Lyran Commonwealth, and Inner Sphere General. Additionally, you have the Free Worlds League Duchy of Andurian, the Tamar Pact, and the Vesper Marches, which also have some nice color logos to go with them. The next group is the Inner Sphere Clans, which includes some original clans, such as the Hell's Horses, Jade Falcons, Sea Foxes, the Rossalog Dominion, Raven Alliance, and Wolf Empire, as well as the Inner Sphere Clan General List, and it also includes some new factions, some of which you could say are rebranded to fit the new setting. This includes the Aliena Mercantile League, the Clan Protectorate, and three Star League clan lists, Jade Falcons, Smoke Jaguar, and Wolf. Periphery powers include the Cauldron Protectorate, Filtveld Coalition, Franck Reaches, Magistry of Canopus, Marian Hegemony, Pirates, Scorpion Empire, which aren't clan, but they are clan, it's kind of weird, and the Torin Concordat, as well as the periphery general units themselves. Then you have the Mercenary category, and the other category, both of which are unchanged. There is a review thread on the BattleTech forums, which is on the announcement message on the front page of the Master Unit List to report any errors, and they have specific guidelines with which to spot errors in the announcement. Also in the news, the Hammerhead has a new exclusive premium miniature available from the Catalyst web store. All the proceeds from the miniature are going towards helping a member of the Iron Moon Metal staff who was diagnosed with cancer. And the miniature is available on web store for $14.99. There will be a review of that miniature, even though I don't have one physically, but I have plenty of pictures. So in addition to all this, now this is slightly old, I wrote this a little while back, there was a leak of Empire Loan, but now it's just out. And pretty much it looks like Clan Wolf's losing territory in the Empire to the Free Worlds League. The Clan Protectorate has carved out a semi-autonomous space within the Free Worlds League for themselves that borders the Wolves. I'm very much hoping this leads to a reborn Clan Novacat with the remnants of the Novacats and Spirit Cats making up their Talmon. We will see, though, as you know, as I go through and review the book and talk about it later on in another episode. So on to the Dark Age. What can I say? First of all, I'm not going that far in depth. There's two reasons. The first is that I only lightly followed the Dark Age. And the second, it was something of a dumpster fire when we finally got to it. First of all, when the fan base came into this era, they did so in a way that was quite jarring. As I have mentioned previously, WizKids thought it would be an awesome idea to convert BattleTech into a system that was similar to their very successful Mage Knight system that they had developed a while back. On top of this, they decided a time jump would be a wonderful way to do it, and they limited the scope of the universe to the inside of a nation known as the Republic of the Sphere. And were essentially covering its demise from within as the HBG network had collapsed. Instead of relying on known factions, they instead decided to make a multitude of micro-factions inside the Republic. Proxies, if you will. This included the Republic, the Northwind Highlanders, the Spirit Cats, Swordsworn, Dragon's Fury, Stormhammers, Steel Wolves, and Bannison's Raiders. I think that's all of them off the top of my head. Each of these factions were a microcosm of the Inner Sphere and the clans in a way. Also, they had decided that because the Republic had been wildly successful in calling for the disarmament of the Inner Sphere, that mechs were super rare, way rarer than back in 3025. And you might see anything from an Atlas to an upgunned loader mech on the field. As for the rest of the Inner Sphere, we were left completely in the dark. I think this is the main part that rankled the fan base the most, as the big sweeping storylines that would normally get in, that we would normally get in the entirety of the Inner Sphere, were left out of the purview of the game, and left a lot of people feeling like they'd been abandoned. Eventually, well after Catalyst became the licensee of the property, they were able to move forward into the Dark Age and fill out the universe more thoroughly. When they did, we had a few major things happen. The Free Worlds League is where we'll start. After the Jihad, the League shattered into its member states, making it a region where no one power really had control. And instead, it was a number of smaller states which would normally band together when faced with an outside threat. The Wolf Clan ended up starting in their occupation zone, assaulted Tharkat as their Khan, a genetic cocktail of Vlad Ward, Catherine Steiner-Davian, and Victor Steiner-Davian, tried to lay claim to the throne of the Laren Alliance, and then moved to a section of space where they carved out an empire between the Alliance and the Free Worlds League. The Khan of Clan Jade Falcon killed the Clan Council by ramming a warship into the planet they were on, began using something called the Mongrel Doctrine, and essentially became a bloodthirsty madwoman who terrorized the Larens. Clan Novacat, ever the misunderstood and maligned clan, sided with the wrong person in a civil war in the Draconis Combine. They were all but wiped out, with remnants of their clan beginning to make their way to a section of space in the Free Worlds League known as the Clan Protectorate, where the Spirit Cats had moved to as the Republic was collapsing. The Federated Suns was invaded by the Draconis Combine and the Capellan Confederation, losing New Avalon to the Combine and going through two First Princes in short order as Harrison was killed by his son, who was then killed on Palermo. And now Julian Davian is the elected First Prince, who is literally leading from the front. Of course, with New Avalon captured, so is the seat of the New Avalon Catholic Church. With this happening, the new Pope is a warrior Pope who is also trying to push back the Draconis Combine with his own forces, papal forces. Then there are the Capellans, who are snapping up every crumb of the Republic they can as they fight a two-front war against the Fed Suns and the Republic, but they did at last, I believe, have a ceasefire with the Fed Suns to concentrate on the Republic. Even with the Jihad, this is still a major jump between the world as we last saw it and where things are in this era, as the information regarding actual engagements in that period is spread over a multitude of source books. I want to instead focus on some of the personalities of the era. The first is Devlin Stone. Yes, that Devlin Stone from the Jihad. The old dude still lives and is pushing over 100. After he mysteriously left, everything in the Republic went to shit. Eventually, it was discovered that he was in cryosleep and was awakened by a man named Tucker Harwell. Devlin is thought to be a genius, military mastermind. With the lack of David Lear, though, it seems he may have been more of a figurehead than a real genius. Maybe he got lucky early on in the Jihad, or he just understood the enemy that much better. Regardless, once he woke up from cryosleep to find the Republic was in ruin, everyone decided it would be best to defer to him instead of see if he was really mentally sharp. Next up, we have Alaric Ward, the man born from three parents. A bit of incest thrown in for good measure, I guess. Alaric shows one of the weird traits of Battletech that, for some reason, things like tactical, strategic, and military genius are somehow inherited as a genetic trait of if you have Inner Sphere parentage, but not clan. Alaric would conquer Tharkat after the Archon tried to leverage the civilians of Clan Wolf against them. He's a good strategist, seems to have learning the ropes from his gene mother, and he has the same penchant to surround himself with smart people like Victor did. Another big clan personality who would be pivotal in the Dark Age era is Malvina Hazen, where Alaric is a calculating figure who sees some wisdom in the Ghost Bear approach of integrating members of Inner Sphere society into his clan. Malvina goes the opposite direction and sees them as little more than human flotsam. If I were to draw a historical context, it would be that Malvina seems to take Sherman's idea of the March to the Sea to an extreme as part of her vision of the Mongrel Doctrine is to destroy everything. There are no prisoners taken, and there is no quarter given. If you oppose her, she will try to end you, and will usually succeed. This paints the Jade Falcons in a completely different light than the Wolves. As far as Inner Sphere personalities, the first that comes to mind is Julian Davi. Julian is supposed to succeed Harrison Davian for the throne of the Federated Suns. When Harrison's son Caleb found out about this, he shoved his dad off a balcony before anything official was announced and just succeeded him. As he did, he sent Julian off to the other side of the Inner Sphere, I guess thinking that he would get himself killed. Unfortunately for Caleb, Julian is good. He has a great deal of old Davian luck, or fiat, depending on which you prefer. After crazy-ass Caleb got himself killed, not before losing huge tracts of lands to the Capellan Confederation under Draconis Combine, Julian was chosen as successor, and he has been using the support he has, as well as material support from Devlin Stone, to shore up a very fragile Federated Sons. I bring up these four as they seem to be some of the biggest movers in the universe during the era, and major plot points revolve around the actions that they take, or choose not to. They also will be for the characters pivotal at the end of the era. Now, as far as the technology that you would see in the Dark Age, it swings all over the place. You have everything from upgun work mechs to clan battle mechs and every army of the Inner Sphere. One of the more interesting things about the era is that, in a way, it has reached a full balance when compared to previous eras. I say this because of the availability of clan technology to Inner Sphere forces, and that the clans are using some Inner Sphere equipment. This isn't so much because the Inner Sphere powers are capable of producing clan tech independently. As it stands, the Sea Foxes are selling this technology to them. Also, with the Novacats taking the wrong side in the Civil War, the Combine was able to inherit a great deal of technology and clan production facilities from the Novacats as they were forced to flee for the Protectorate within the Free Worlds League. That pretty much rounds out the Dark Age era itself in a small, brief synopsis and kind of gives you an idea of where things stand. So the next thing I want to talk about is the Trevor Project Raffle. This was a major undertaking. It started from a very small idea. Initially, I had planned on doing maybe a trinary of mechs and vehicles to be raffled off. This turned into an entire cluster with 30 mechs, 15 vehicles, and 16 squads of battle armor for a grand total of 61 units. This also included an autographed set of Solaris 7 coasters from George Ledoux and a signed copy of the Warrior Trilogy from Mike Stackpole. Overall, the end result greatly exceeded initial expectations, and the $1,000 goal was shattered with a total of $6,725 donated to the Trevor Project. We had a number of talented artists participate in the raffle from every walk of life in the community, and included everyone from Camo Specs artists to commission and hobby painters. I also have to give a massive thank you to Jake Skelcher, who put together posters which drove a lot of last-minute donations our way. I would be remiss if I did not mention our sponsors as well: Ares Games and Miniatures, Fortress Miniatures and Games, Death Ray Designs, KGM 2500 Cubed, and his line of Sprawl Under Siege that is sold at Hardware Studios. Their help absolutely made this possible. And like I said, I didn't expect it to be as big as it is. And finally, I want to go ahead and announce the winners of the raffle. So first of all, we had Genghis Philip, won a set of Paul LaRue Alpha Strike cards. Catherine Reeve won the Solaris 7 coasters, autographed by George Ledoux. The Inner Sphere Heavy Battle Lance and Shalom went to Daniel Haslett. The Inner Sphere Direct Fire Lance and Striker Lance went to Jeffrey Gates. The Clan Heavy Striker Star and Heavy Battle Star went to Jamie Wagner. The Clan Heavy Battle Star and Striker Star went to Steve Moore. The Signed Warrior Trilogy went to Spencer Clark. The First Somerset Strikers went to Zach Wilson. And finally, the Clan Nova Cat G-Galaxy went to Faith McCloskey. I want to thank everyone who participated, from people who were working on the raffle to the people behind the scenes who helped bring this all together. And also, I want to thank everybody who entered. I'm already looking at what to do for next year, but to be fair, once all the prizes are out by the end of this month, I hope to have at least a month or two off just to concentrate on my life in general. So I know I'm going to go into another subject here, but I do want to go ahead and do a quick overview of the new source book, Empire Alone. The source book focuses on Wolf Empire and the Free Worlds League. It pretty much brings us up to speed on the going-ons in the region. I'm not going to go heavy into spoilers or anything, but needless to say, this book does show us the fallout of the wolves leaving their territory nearly undefended, as well as an ascendant clan protectorate that appears to have some internal troubles as to where its loyalties lie. I will say, with my precious Nova Cats having moved what is left of their clan into the protectorate, I was very happy to see that there were three color plates of clan protectorate schemes. The first is a gray camo and white scheme. This is reminiscent of the Spirit Cats itself, but is not quite the same as we would normally expect to see. The second is a unit that was put together from Sea Fox Warriors that has the Sea Fox colors, but also includes either a purple or brown stripe on the neck, indicating if their loyalties lie with the Free Worlds League or the Wolf Empire. And finally, an olive drab to white scheme. This starts with the green on the top and fades to a white on the legs, with some white striping and highlights on the torso and arms. This final scheme isn't attributed to a specific unit, and I believe it is likely that it's the Clan Protector Guardians, which I will definitely be painting up, as I have a love of fades and a love of OD green. And this scratches both at the same time. It essentially lets me use the units that were common to the Nova Cats. Next up, we'll have our Mech Tech segment, but first, let's have a word from our sponsors.
Hello, partner. You have trouble with some pesky backwater bandits or a highly advanced race of super soldiers? If so, Mifkit and Minis has a solution for you. The Pit Viper. That's right, this machine, a fusion of classic and reliable chassis, gives you the best of everything. If you want something that has the firepower to put down a rebellion, but the finesse to sidestep the enemy's shots, this is exactly what you're looking for. Built out of reliable parts, made right here in the U.S. of A, the Pit Viper is guaranteed to be the solution to all your military problems. Get yours today at Mifkit and Minis.
Okay, so that was a little different. But anyway, back to our show, Mech Tech. For today, we're going to be exploring something that was suggested by one of the patrons. Today, we begin to look at the family of mechs that is inspired by the Jenner. This included the venerable Jenner itself, the Jenner 2C, the Owens, and the Rattlesnake series that is shown in Shrapnel. Tonight, though, we'll be focusing on the Jenner itself. This venerable machine was introduced in 2784 in a Draconis Combine. The mech was used exclusively by the Combine for over 50 years and would become synonymous with that state. The Jenner weighs in at 35 tons, the top end of the light mech weight scale. The JR-7D, which is what is seen in the standard production model of the mech, is built on a standard chassis and powered by a 245 rated fusion engine, which allows the machine to reach top speeds of up to 118 kilometers an hour. The mech has the ability to clear rough terrain with a set of jump jets, which allow it to leap up to at least 150 meters. Well, total of 150, I should say. The JR-7D is armed with a mix of short and medium range firepower, carrying a single SRM-4 launcher as well as four medium lasers, making it a deadly knife fighter and pack hunter. This model of the Jenner comes in at a battle value of 875. An earlier variant of the Jenner, the JR-7A, carries a single large laser in place of the diverse short-range payload of the JR-7D. This earlier model has a battle value of 712. Next up, you have the JR-7F. This model removes the SRM-4 launcher of the 7D, replaces it with three additional tons of armor. While it does remove some of the punch of the 7D model, it has the advantage of adding a great deal of survivability in comparison, as well as making the mech an amazing raider in extended operations due to its lack of ammunition. The JRS-7F has a battle value of 1,011. Next in the series is the JRS-7K Kilo. This version changes the standard armor to ferrofibrous, which allows it to lighten the armor by half a ton, but have the same level of protection. The half ton, which is freed up, is used to add case to the mech's SRM ammunition, giving it a higher degree of survivability when compared to the 7D. The BV of the 7K is 889. Next evolution of the standard Jenner is the JR-7N. This variant pushes the design to the extremes of what was available when it was built. It uses heavy ferrofibers for increased protection and carries four ER medium lasers, as well as an SRM 4 launcher. It is powered by an extra light engine to free up even more weight and has jump jets, which allow it to jump up to 210 meters at a time. It carries a Beagle active probe, and the ammunition is protected with Case 2, which allows it to survive an ammunition explosion that would cripple most other mechs. This version of the Jenner comes in at a battle value of 1,233. There are a group of Jenners that I haven't mentioned yet, but they're somewhat specialized in their roles, and these are the C-Series. These mechs are designed to carry a C3 slave system, which allows them to share targeting data with other units and act as advanced scout units. The first of these is the JR-7C. This is a simple modification of the 7K, strips out a medium laser to mount the C3 slave. It has a battle value of 836. The next in the series is the 7C2. This one is based heavily on the Jenner 2C. It carries three multi-missile launcher 5s and mounts heavy ferrofibers for added protection. It does carry a C3 slave unit and a jump distance of up to 180 meters. To make the needed room for all of this, as far as weight, the mech has an extra light engine, extra light gyro, and small cockpit, making it somewhat fragile and a little bit harder to pilot. The battle value of this variant is 769. The C3 is more of a field upgrade than anything, swapping out the 7D's medium lasers for ER versions. The heat sinks are upgraded to double strength models, and the missile launcher and ammo are removed for additional heat sinks and a C3 slave unit. The battle value of the C3 is 1,069. Now, the last of the variants to carry the C3 system is the JR-7C4. This model is built around a C3 boosted slave, allowing it to cut through ECM. The mech carries a pair of MML-5 launchers and uses 10 double heat sinks. It is also encased in heavy ferrofibrous armor for protection. The mech fills a similar role to the C2, but without a lot of the baggage of the extra light systems. The C4 comes in at a battle value of 703. So let's take a look at these machines in Alpha Strike. I want to start with what is technically chronological order, even though it's not what was shown first in the books, but that's a different story for a different day. The JR-7A. The JR-7A is tight battle mech, size 1, target movement modifier of 3, movement of 14 with 10 jump, roll of scout, and has a short and medium value of 1 and long of 0. It has no overheat and has armor of 2, structure of 3. For specials, it has energy and jump weak 1 and comes in at 20 points. If you're looking for a cheap scout with decent target movement modifier for the Star League era, this is your machine. In essence, it's a proto pack hunter. The next model would be the JR-7D. The JR-7D is type battle mech, size 1, target move of 3, movement of 14, 10 jump. It's a striker and its point value 26. It hits harder than its Star League predecessor with a short and medium of 2, but no long range, and does have an overheat of 1. It has 2 armor and 3 structure, and has a special of jump weak 1. After this, we have the JR-7F. It's classified as a striker. Battle mech, size 1, target move 3, movement of 14, 10 jump, comes in at 32 points. Short and medium of 2, no long range value or overheat. It has armor of 4, though, and structure of 3, with the specials of energy and jump weak 1. This is a more expensive version of the mech,
but has far better survivability in if you're using multiple dice rolls in Alpha Strike than any of its predecessors. After that, you have the JR7K. It's battle mech, size 1, target move 3, 14 movement with 10 jump, and is a striker at 26 points. Much like the 7D, it has short and medium of 2, no long and an overheat of 1. Its specials are case and jump weak 1. It has marginal survivability over the 7D, but does have a slight edge in that if it takes one structure damage and has an ammo explosion and suffered a second damage, as long as it doesn't have another ammo explosion, it'll be up for at least one more round. It is situational, but gives it a slight edge at no real cost. The JR7N is the next variant we have here. This is a very different mech from the previous generations in its combat capabilities, as well as its survivability. It is type battle mech, size 1, target move 3. It has movement of 14J with the roll of striker and costs 38 points. It has damage values of 3 at short and medium, no longer overheat, armor 4 and structure of 2, with a special of case 2, probe, and recon, making it an effective and hardy light scout mech, even though it's not a scout. And as before, I am presenting the C-Series separately, as they have similar mission profiles and are in a way distinct from the standard Jenners. First of these, the JR7-C. This model is type battle mech, size 1, target of 3, movement of 14, 10 jump, and is a striker. Comes in at 28 points. It has short and medium of 2, no long, and no overheat. Overheat of 1, sorry. Special abilities include C3 Slave, Case, Mech HQ 1, and Mobile Headquarters 1, and Jump Weak 1. The next in this series, the JR7-C2, this variant type battle mech, size 1, target of 3, movement of 14 with 12 jump, has short and medium values of 2 and long of 1 with no overheat. It has 4 armor, 2 structure with special abilities of C3 Slave, Case, Indirect Fire 1, which can come in handy, mech, Mobile Headquarter 1, and Jump Weak 1. This variant comes in at 35 points, which is a little steep, but at least for a Jenner. The JR7-C3 is the second-to-last model in the series. This model is similar to the 7C. It is type battle mech, size 1, target move of 3, movement of 14, 10 jump, and as a striker, comes in at 31 points. Has short and medium of 2, no long or overheat damage abilities. Has 3 armor and 3 structure with special abilities of C3 Slave, Energy, Mobile Headquarter 1, and Jump Leap 1. Finally, we have the C4. This model is 32 points. It's type battle mech, size 1, target move 3, and a missile though. It has short range damage of 2, with 1 at medium and 1 at long. Has no overheat and armor protection of 4 with structure 2. Its special abilities are C3 boosted slave system, case, indirect fire 1, and mobile headquarter 2. All the basic Jenners, with the exception of the possibility of the 7N, they're all excellent troopers. The 7N is more of a true striker, using its ability to jump to get into a good position for striking an enemy, preferably in the rear. The C-Series all seems to either skew to knife fighter, with the ability to relay information, or a standoff platform to support a light lance with fire support. Overall, the Jenner is great as an objective grabber and also a great spotter. If you're using one of the C variants, make sure you have it as part of a C3 lance. Otherwise, all the additional points paid, because it is assumed to be in a C3 network, automatically go to waste. So that is it for tonight's episode. I would like to thank you if you made it this far, and I will be taking a much needed break for the next few weeks. While I'm on my break, I will have Mech Tech episodes released, and after I have been able to rest and recuperate a bit, I will be back covering God knows what in Battletech, but hopefully it will be awesome. Thank you very much. This is Kerry, signing off. I'm gonna find my meaning, I can make a change, I wanna play the game. You